When Tillamook ice cream beckons you to the freezer aisle, which irresistibly creamy flavor do you choose? While you're thinking,
try not to fuck up the glass.
Tillamook ice cream. Extraordinary dairy.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So many white guys. Guys, so what? How much whiteness? All over the place. God damn. So many white guys. So many white guys.
Oh my gosh, you guys. We're back with another episode of So Many White Guys from WNYC Studios. I'm your host, Phoebe Robinson, and back with me is my sweet, cute friend with an amazing brain, Joni Mitch.
Hi, Phoebe.
So, guys, you're making some huge changes at So Many White Guys. And I think the biggest one is...
Well, listeners, they let me out of the producer booth.
My glass prison.
We are in the same room.
Oh my God.
So no more of that jankety ass sort of hollow sound.
No more clicking in and out.
Yeah, I'm looking at you in the eye right now.
How's it feel?
It's pretty hot.
Yeah, I think it's nice.
Yeah. There's so much change happening, you guys, but if you can't believe it, it's season 4. And you guys aren't going to believe the fabulous peeps I'm going to talk to. It feels really good to be back, girl.
I know, I missed it so much. And this season, I know all the dirt behind the scenes, and I'm going to tell you, it's going to be hot. That's like my reality TV trailer.
Oh my gosh, you've been watching too much Batch.
It is bad. I'm hooked. I was just telling Phoebe how bad it makes me feel. Really bad. But it is going to be a great season.
Yes.
We're so pumped.
Yes.
Yes.
You look a little darker.
I went to Puerto Rico.
Oh.
It was so great.
Can you do that? Oh, that was really good. You surprised yourself.
I did surprise myself.
Oh, can you do that?
Oh, crrr.
Oh my God. I think you're a rapper.
I have a skill, you guys.
Joni Mitch, you listen to Cardi B a lot?
No.
Oh, crrr. So you were in the PR for, what, 7 days?
I was there for about a week, yeah.
That's hot.
It was so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, you went on an amazing trip, though. Didn't you go all over Europe with British Bake Off?
I did, you guys. I had to meet Bae's fam. So we went to do, like, a tour of the UK. So we got in, like, a few days early. He was, like, getting a tattoo worked on. This is, like, who I'm dating, someone who, like, gets tattoos worked on. And it was, like, on his knee.
That sounds painful.
And so, you know, there are a couple of times where I was, like, holding his hand. I'd be like, oh, this is what it would be like if I was, like, ever pregnant in the delivery room. And I'm just, like, stroking his hand. I'm like, you got this, babe.
Anyone who has ever had a baby is like, I hate this.
They're like, it's not like getting a dumb fucking tattoo on your knee. It's close.
Deep breaths.
Yeah, so that's how we started the trip.
Yeah.
And then we went to Bournemouth, which is where he's from. It's like 2 hours south of London for like 8 days.
What's it like?
Well, I was the only black person there. And it was just like, it was nice, but it was just like, you know, people like want to touch your hair. You're just like,
really?
Yeah.
Wait, did somebody try to touch your hair?
Multiple people.
That's horrible. How did Bake Off respond when he saw people approaching you?
I mean, I think he got it. Like, he gets frustrated that it's affecting me because he's like, I want you to enjoy it. He like understood and was very sort of supportive and just, you know, whenever I was just like irritated. And then cut to like a couple weeks ago, we went to Sweet Chick in Brooklyn. He was like the only white person there. And I saw him, he like felt it. And I was like, this is like how I feel most of the time. So it was cool that he got to experience it and know like that's like how I've had to walk through the 34 years on this planet. But I will say the people are nice in Bournemouth and London.
How long were you in the UK for?
Bake Off and I were basically in the UK for like 2 weeks. And then we went to Venice for like 4 days. We went to the opera. It's like my first time going to
the
opera.
That's so cool.
And this is, what is it? What's the one that they saw in Pretty Woman?
You said this is in Italian. So how am I going to know what they're saying?
You'll know. Believe me, you'll understand. The music's very powerful.
La Traviata, that's what it was. That's the one that Bake Off and I went to.
Oh my God. It's like that's your benchmark for culture.
Yeah.
If it was in Pretty Woman, fine.
But I'm like, I wanted to watch something where I sort of knew what the plot was going to be so I wasn't going to be confused. But it was just crazy to hear people just singing like that. Like, how do you discover that you can do opera? That's wild.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
That's I've cool. discovered that I can't.
Walk us through that journey.
I tried to sing and it sounds like shit. So then I stopped.
Can you give us a little taste?
You know what? Phoebe can do all the singing for the both of us.
What do you want me to sing? Oh, I love singing Lady Gaga, Shallow.
I can be Bradley Cooper if he didn't sing.
He has such a good voice. I was very sort of like...
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
I was like, I smash based off that voice. Tell me something, girl. I'm on the deep end, ready to dive in.
That was actually really good.
Oh, that was barely good.
Can you do the part where she's like,
it just sounds like bad romance.
Oh, it's true. Oh, my God. Phoebes, it's been too long.
It's been too long. Fucking hell. Shallow's a great song.
It is a great song.
That's going to happen all season. I hope you know. I'm just going to just...
That's the theme song. We're going to have to get it licensed. We like bankrupt WNYC Studios.
No one can send their kids to college anymore because I'm singing...
That'll be $2 million. They're like, sorry, you guys can't have health insurance because Phoebe Robinson wants to have Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper as the So Many White Guys theme song. Good luck.
Anyway, let's get back to the topic at hand. So in the past, when we've had to like toss to commercials, I've been a whiny little bitch. But this season, when you say it's time to go to commercial, guess what? We're just gonna go.
Some people like to deep clean every Saturday morning. I prefer to spend a few minutes every day keeping things fresh with Lysol. Lysol's brand new Day All-Purpose Cleaner cleans and kills 99.9% of viruses and bacteria on hard, non-porous surfaces around your home with a fragrance that feels like a tropical getaway for your senses. Don't just clean, Lysol clean.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right, so Joni Mitch, there's literally like no one else I could picture kicking off this season than today's guest.
Oh my God, I know.
For our first episode of The Seas, I talked to my girl and one of my favorite activists and actresses, Jamila Jamil. She's British, which means she just sounds so much smarter than all of us.
But Phoebe, you know how to speak British.
I do. Very much so. Yes. Cheers. Thank you. I'm a little bit posh. You want a little cup of tea?
No, thank you.
Oh, I would love a cup of tea. You know what? When you're from South London, right, it's just like in the UK, and like you have like BBC, you have BBC One, you have BBC News. It's just a lot of options. You have a little bit Monty Python thrown in. It's just lovely to be from Britain.
Wow. You really know about the culture there, Phoebs.
I just listed a bunch of things that's from a Google search. Anyway, Jamila is an actress, model, and a freaking damn activist. Oh,
this is going to be season 4, guys. Get ready.
Now you know what it's like to date me. Anyway, she's really cool, and she really rose to fame in the States from her amazingly funny show called The Good Place on NBC. Now, I know, Joni Mitch, you're a huge fan of the show.
I love this show so much. It's so good. Her character, Tahani, is just wild. Mm-hmm. She's insanely privileged, insanely narcissistic, and she drops people's names like crazy.
I haven't been this upset since my good friend Taylor was rudely upstaged by my other friend Kanye, who was defending my best friend, Beyonce.
And she also always wears, like, evening wear.
Yeah, she has great style on the show. Yeah.
Lots of gowns.
Yeah.
Lots of gowns.
Ooh, okay. So here's the thing about Jamila, y'all. She's not just entertaining us. She is also an activist who cares about life positivity. That's the phrase she likes to use, life positivity, not body pause, life pause.
She's so amazing. Like, she even gave a speech in the British House of Commons on body image and the media.
Yeah, and she's worked with different human rights organizations, and she's been calling out companies like Avon and Flat Tummy Tees for their fat-phobic-ish, which is pretty damn badass.
I know. She even called them out for this ad that was like, ooh, cellulite, gross, and they took it down, which I think is a win for cellulite.
Yeah, also, everyone has cellulite, and also, it's cool.
It is cool.
Yeah, so get the fuck over it, guys. She even started an Instagram account that I love, that I've been following, called I_Weigh. And it's all about people embracing and celebrating their true selves. No more airbrushing up in there. Oh, and just as a trigger warning for listeners, we do talk about eating disorders. So keep that in mind. It's all good stuff. It's going to be really fruitful, insightful, but I just want to give you the heads up. Okay, here's my conversation with goddess Jamila Jamil. So, Jamila Jamil, hey girl.
Hello.
Thank you for joining So Many White Guys.
Thank you for having me. This is a great honor.
I'm so glad you're going to do the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I feel quite special and starstruck.
Oh, stop, miss. You just hit a million followers on Instagram.
I did hit a million followers on Instagram, so which is mad.
You're a real person.
You know
now.
What's great, though, is that like I started the year with predominantly male followers, and now I only have 18% male followers, and I have 82% of bitches, which is so great. I'm so happy. I really wanted that.
But that's how we met via Instagram.
We did meet on Instagram. Why was that?
I think I saw a couple of clips of your, this is like even before I seen The Good Place, and I saw a couple of clips of you just, or interviews, just talking about women's bodies and just like, just basically how everyone's like a dumb fucking idiot when it comes to women. And I was like, she's really cool. I'm going to just start following her.
And I think I was already following you.
Oh, you were?
Just creeping on you from afar because I thought you were so great.
Oh, thank you.
And I was so happy when you messaged me.
But I think one of the reasons why people really gravitate towards you and really love you is because you're really using your platform to speak out about issues that are really important to you. But at the same time, you can also be silly and goofy and joke about farts. And you really strike that balance of taking like what you care about seriously without taking yourself seriously. Yeah. And so as a public figure now that you are, how do you sort of, is that something you like been working on? Like, how did you get to this place?
No, I've been an activist for like 6 or 7 years. And it started, and this reminds me a little bit of something you said in your book, but you talked about how it wasn't until you gained weight that you started to realize that there was an issue with the way that we treat people and like fat phobia, and that it sucked to realize that it's only when it actually personally affects you that you start to realize that you need to speak out about women's rights. And so I was, a brief history of me is I was a very fat, very sick child. I was deaf until I was 12. And then I had...
Told me that.
Yeah, so I was deaf on and off until I was 12. I used to have constant operations. And then finally, when I was 12, they put kind of like a fake eardrum inside my ear. So it's, I think, skin from my butt.
Oh, that's great.
It was 20 years ago, but I'm pretty sure that I'm listening to you through my ass.
That's how most people listen to me anyway.
I mean, you know, I try. It's very Ace Ventura of me. And so then I was super sick as a child and then in a wheelchair between 17 and 19. So constantly on medication that meant I was always struggling with my weight and very bullied for it. So I was a chubby kid who then lost weight, became a TV host, and then gained weight again on steroids for my asthma, and I gained like 75 pounds. And I got fat shamed so extraordinarily by the UK press for like 6 months. I had paparazzi hunting me down, hiding outside my house, like taunting me everywhere I would go, especially if I would go to the supermarket or something to ask me what I was going to go and buy to eat.
Yeah.
In the hopes that I would cry because they love to get a sad photograph of a fat woman so that they could, you know, paint the narrative of like you're thin and happy and you're fat and sad. Whereas actually it was an amazing time in my life. But the narrative around me was that I was fat and depressed and a failure. So I became an activist then. And I got somewhere with it, but not really until 6 years later. I'm now on an NBC comedy and I'm still talking about this shit that I've been talking about consistently for 6 years. Yeah. And now that I'm slim and I'm famous in America, now everyone's listening to what I have to say. And so a lot of people don't know my backstory with activism in this area. The problem is that when I was fat, no one listened to me. And now that I'm slim again, people are, and that in itself defines the problem.
Yeah. And so, because you're in this place where you do have like a million followers on Instagram, and I'm sure you experience this more than I do, but recently I like walked out of New York Comedy Club because it had an alleged rapist on the lineup that I didn't know about. And I didn't feel comfortable about it.
Jesus Christ.
Which is like terrible. And then literally people were like, oh, do you want to do an interview about this? Do you want to write an essay about it? And I was like, I like wasn't doing that to create more content. I think it's really hard.
Oh, for sure.
And so how do you navigate that?
Every fucking thing I tweet now becomes news.
Yeah.
And it's always because, as a woman of color in particular, it's always hits out at, bites back at, like slams. I'm always slamming everyone, even if I'm so politely.
Yeah.
I'm so English. I'm like just sort of female Hugh Grant, just being like, I don't think. Okay, admittedly, I did once tell Kim Kardashian to fuck off, but still,
you're not
outside of that. Outside of that, I'm normally quite polite and just like trying to argue and debate, and they're just like, she just rips the head off of, and they use this really violent language around brown women. And I mean, even more so for black women. When I was in a discussion, a really like completely peaceful discussion with a black celebrity, they said that we locked horns.
Oh.
And that she rammed into me. And I noticed, I was like, wow, when you're black, the language becomes even more violent about just having a completely normal discourse.
Yeah. I do think it's hard because I didn't say yes to doing that interview. I was like, I don't want to talk about it. And I think there is...
I think that was the right call in that situation. But, you have to pick your battles.
Yeah, but do you ever... Are you worried that the message that you're trying to get out is getting muddled by all the circus that people are trying to create around it? Whether it's you, oh, Jamila calling out Avon, like, she's so intense, or like, well, she's so pretty, why is she talking? Like, it's hard to sort of separate the message from all the bullshit that surrounds it from everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm having to be careful. But I also think, like, fuck this likable shit.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck this thing where I have to be likable and agreeable. I've been racially abused. I've been beaten up because of, like, being Pakistani. I've been sexually abused for being just a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I've been through so many things. Like, if I'm not likable, if I'm a bit angry sometimes, or if I want to speak out about something, I'm a grown fucking woman and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, people have the right to unfollow me and not listen to me and mute my name, which I highly recommend sometimes, actually. Just mute my name. I've muted my own name on the internet many times. But I'm not here for this.
Yeah,
I've refused to shut up. I'd rather go down in flames than be complicit in this shit and be silent. I think when we're silent, we're as bad. And I find it amazing that when I go to, like, award ceremonies and stuff, you have so many, like, famous actresses and women coming up to me being like, I love what you do, it's so inspiring, that's all, and it's all very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But then they never say anything publicly, and they don't also ban Photoshop, and they don't stop flogging these crazy products.
Yeah.
And they don't admit to the surgery that they've had. I think that's a really fucked thing.
Yeah.
If you want to have surgery, have surgery. Like, I don't care what you do with your face. You want to turn your face into Stephen fucking Seagal. Make yourself look like an actual
that's
rose.
That's a choice.
Yeah, sure. I don't care what surgery you have, but own up to it. I think that's a really important thing. I think that really fucked with you and me when we were younger, is not knowing what people really look like and therefore holding ourselves to their standard.
Yeah.
Was that really messed with us? And you said something again in your book where you said up until a certain year, you could have remembered what you weighed every single year of your life. I was like that.
Yeah.
This stuff messed us up so much. I've had so many problems with eating and with food that have only gone away in the last 3 years because of therapy. But it is, it's important for me to say something.
Amen, sister. But I want to go back.
Okay.
First of all, what was your childhood like growing up in England?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think being bullied shaped you? And were there any sort of, like, really fun memories from your childhood that you also think shaped you as well?
Television shaped me as a childhood. That was my main thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, I had a difficult childhood. We grew up with, like, basically no money, and we had to move a lot because my father used to run out of money quite a lot, and then my dad left. So I was raised by a single mother, mostly. And it was just a very stressful childhood, especially because I couldn't hear a lot of the time. I was very sick. So I didn't have a great first 20 years, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But comedy kept me alive, and I would watch it morning to night. It was the first thing that I saw in the morning.
What were you watching?
Friends, Frasier, Cheers, which is why it's so wild that I'm now acting with Ted Danson, who I had such a big crush on as a child, and all the movies, like anything that Eddie Murphy was in, like Trading Places, Coming to America. The first movie I ever watched was The Terminator, which is wild because I was two.
And wait, so that was like the first movie?
Well, my brother's 9 years older than me, so he got his hands on it, and he was babysitting me, and he was like, we're going to watch this new fun Disney film. And so that was the first film I ever watched. So I literally became a violent two-year-old. That movies do, like, impact children, I promise you. I tried to, like, attack my dad with a toy hammer when I was two. But yeah, so comedy was the thing that carried me through my childhood. I wasn't great with kids. I was, you know, a weird kid. I was also very academic and like just sort of like your classic nerdy South Asian. And I think what some people in America don't know is that bullying against South Asians in the United Kingdom is like probably some of the more extreme racism you can see over in the UK. And so we are really like not welcome, and we are ridiculed, and there's such bad erasure in like American and UK culture where we're only ever seen as like, we are the silly minicap person, and hello, I always talking like this.
Yeah.
We're never the sex symbol, you know, and until so recently there were actual white people browning up and playing Indians.
It's
so weird.
Yeah.
So I just didn't have anyone to look to like that. So I think I looked to like white and black culture for my comedy.
Growing up, was your school diverse or like?
No.
Got it.
No, not diverse at all. No, there were like three South Asian girls and maybe four black girls in the whole school.
Wow.
And everyone else was white and super rich. I was a scholarship. We were all scholarship kids.
Yeah, my high school too. Like I had to like do work study and all this
so
stuff.
So you were one of the few in your school?
I was the only black girl in my grade. And I think there were three black girls total in the entire high school.
So wild.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Surely in the moment I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. We like don't realize how much you miss that.
But were you okay at school? Like, were you bullied or were you okay?
I wasn't bullied. I was kind of like a C student. I was very, like, I loved film and TV. So I just spent my time watching that. And like, I didn't really care about work, schoolwork. And so I sort of coasted. My brother was insanely popular. It was like,
and I mean, now he's like insanely successful.
I know,
and
but
he's going to change the world.
I hope so. But it was just like so cool. Like every girl like thought he was the coolest guy. And I'm like, he like was in jazz. Like he's like not cool. Like he's in like jazz band. And like, you know, like he like watches C-SPAN for fun. But like he was like, truly, it's like, this is not the coolest guy. But like everyone, he's so charming is what it is. It's like he has one of the best personalities. So like everyone would just be like, Phil. But it was just like, you look back on
it,
you're like,
that's a funny shadow to be in.
Yeah, right.
Like your nerdy older brother.
He watches C-SPAN, how hot, you know. But so you watch a lot of TV, and I read that you were hit by a car as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think if anyone ever has any sort of brush with death like that, that has to shape you in some way.
And changed my life.
Yeah, okay.
So I got hit by one car into another car because I just saw a bee.
I just hit by one car into another
car, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It was like Final Destination. but I just saw a bee, and because my girl fucked me up, my girl fucked me up. And now I just think all bees are going to kill me. So just seeing a bee on the same side of the road as me, my natural, it's so sad that this is my survival instinct, but it is to run into traffic.
Oh,
it's genuinely what my brain does. It like runs into a much more dangerous situation just to get away from the bee. So it was completely my fault. I got hit by one car into another car, broke my back, couldn't walk again for like a year and a half.
So were you wheelchair bound or were you... Or just
yeah,
sort of
I mean,
rest.
The only way I would be able to move around is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think I used a wheelchair a couple of times, but generally, like, I lived on the second floor. So I didn't, and we didn't have an elevator. So I just lived in a room, like a sort of like old Jane Austen film.
Yeah.
on my own.
Yeah.
And everyone my age was kind of off at university all around the country. So I just was alone for about a year and a half in kind of solitary confinement, which was incredible because, A, I watched so much Oprah.
Yes.
And so much Dr. Phil and so much Maury. And so I became very wise. And also it taught me how to respect my body because I've been so anorexic until then. And so I had like a proper anorexia, starving myself, like my bones digging into my bed. Like I didn't have a period for 3 years, didn't eat a meal for 3 years. I was like, legit like lifetime special anorexia. And it taught me that I had like, how fragile this body of mine is and how important it is and how sad it is when you lose the ability to do basic things like piss on your own. My brother, credit to him, carried me to the toilet every day. And so after that, I decided to start eating again and allow myself to respect my body and learn how to like treat it just kindly. And then I also read this book called The Yes Man by Danny Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
And this book changed my whole life. It's just about a man who has depression who decides one day to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And so apart from anal, I have now become someone who says yes to everything. I'm very protective about my asshole. I'm sorry. It's just like, it's my safe space.
It's because you use part of your ass for your ear. So you need to,
you know
what I mean?
I wouldn't be able to hear if someone was blocking it. I became an English teacher. I lied about my age and my qualifications. And because I have a fancy accent, they believed that I was older and qualified. I became an English teacher, teaching English as a foreign language in a school. One day I was in a pub and this TV producer came up to me. We started talking and he said he thought I was funny and that I should try for this huge audition for this big show on Channel 4 in England, which is the biggest channel in England. And I was like, nah. And then he said, it's £1,000 a day. I mean, imagine $1,000 a day for an English teacher.
That's
huge. And
I was like,
okay, what would Danny Wallace do? He would say yes. So because of that book...
Just pause real quick. Did you ever have an inkling that you wanted to be in a TV? Okay, got
no.
it.
Never.
But you watched so much of it and brought you so much joy, but you never felt like, no, oh, this is something I could do.
It's such a I hadn't seen anyone who looked like me on the TV. Mm. So I just thought it's just not a place for Indians.
Yeah.
You know, I never saw myself in entertainment. I just saw myself as a consumer of it. But I think that book made me think, you know what? I've never done this before. I don't know anything about it. Yes, I'm going to go. Danny Wallace would want me to go. Yeah. So I owe this fucking guy my whole life. Wow. Because that's the thing that made me move to America at 28. With no contacts and no visa and leave my job and my relationship and my life in England. Mm-hmm. It was because of that book.
Yeah. And so I know you said that people were sort of like, you're going to move to the States. Like, why? You're not going to make it. Like, people were just
They said I was too old, too fat, and too ethnic.
Oh, my gosh.
So they didn't. The English don't beat around the bush.
And then The Good Place happened. So I did bam, bitch.
I did all right.
Bam, bitch.
I did okay. Yeah, I got very lucky.
but this is really huge though, because The Good Place, you've never acted before.
No.
This is your first role, and it's on a celebrated, critically acclaimed. People really love this show, You're a writer too. Like, I don't think you didn't move here to pursue acting.
No, yeah. I just moved here. I wanted to write comedy because I've been watching it my whole life and it made me so happy and I wanted to make other people happy. And so I got signed as a writer by 3 Arts. And 3 Arts were also making The Good Place and they were like, there's this audition for this very annoying, overly tall English woman who's from Pakistan.
You're like, so me?
I was like, wow, so they must have seen me on TV when I was younger, I guess. And they just said, go to the audition.
Yeah.
And I went because of Danny Wallace.
Yeah.
And so I went to that audition not having any expectations. I think I live my life with high hopes and no expectations. I was so calm and chilled. I was a bit nervous, actually, just before the second audition. I did a little poo. In the toilet at the casting office.
I hope it was in the toilet.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. We all assume, but...
No, this is really bad. So we're in the audition. It was the second audition, I think, this time. Mm-hmm. And the first one had gone well. So I was like, now a little bit nervous because Mike Shaw was going to be in the room. And so I was like, just about to go in. I was like, you know what? I just need to do a little nervous. Yeah. Do you do nervous poos? A little nervous poos? It's like a little cat poo. So I went to do it. And there's only one toilet and it's shared by the casting directors and all of the actresses. Oh. And so it's just in this one office. And I think it was like in Alison Jones's house. So sorry, Alison, because what happened is I then went to flush it and the flush came off in my hand. So I couldn't flush it.
No.
So now it's just me and this little poo just staring at each other like Wild West style, kind of a of what are you going to do now, bitch? And so I don't know what to do. So I'm like, do I have to... Okay, I'm just going to climb out the window and leave and go back to England.
Yeah.
Which is genuinely my first instinct. And I climb onto the toilet and try to climb out of the window that is behind the toilet and realize that it's like a 20-foot drop out there. So if I fall over and break my leg, then they're going to find me and the poo, which is infinitely a worse story. So I decide to climb back in and then I look at it and I'm like, I'm going to have to pick it up.
Yeah, you got
to
scoop it out.
Pick it up. And why are you saying that so casually?
Because that's the only solution is you have to scoop it out.
We need to talk about this. What the fuck? Have you done this before?
I've never, but as soon as you said this, I was like, yeah, you just got to scoop it out. You got to like roll it up
into
the
toilet. I don't appreciate your casualness about this. You foul woman. Well, I was not so nonchalant about this. And I was really stressing about I'd never touched poo before. You know, I don't have any smaller siblings or anything. I don't have a dog. So this would have been my first contact. I put my hand in the bowl. I'm just about to make contact with the water. And then in the corner of my eye, I see there's this little bit of metal sticking out the side of the toilet.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I could maybe use my teeth as a wrench. And if I can pull that backwards, I can flush the toilet. So I do that. I use my teeth as a wrench. I pull the whole thing back. The poo flushes and it's gone. And so by this point, I'm so flustered and I'm so embarrassed. And they know I've been in the toilet for 10 minutes doing this, like what they think is probably an epic shit.
Yeah.
That I don't even remember what happened in that room. I just went in, got out. I was in and out in maybe like a minute and a half. Did my scene with Mike. Didn't really say anything to him. Kind of blacked out and left. And I remember apologizing to him at the end of the audition, being like, I'm sorry for what happened. Please don't tell my agent. And then I just left. And I got the part.
And
I don't know why I told you that. There's something about you.
That is really funny. But it's always, there are always moments where you just embarrass yourself.
You know,
and
what?
It sucks.
It really did teach me something, though. Yeah. I was like, when I don't care, I am the best performer that I could be. When you just don't give a fuck anymore, it is infinitely the best. And I realized how much nerves and self-consciousness really hold us back. So weirdly, that moment was actually very shaping to me, and realizing that shame is not doing me any favors. Yeah.
So can you tell us about what it, you know, watching The Good Place and seeing you guys in interviews, it just seems like so fun. And you guys really seem like tight knit. Like, can you talk about like some of your favorite moments from The Good Place so far?
I think it's because Ted is a great leader. Mike Schur makes the most, who's the creator of the show. He makes the most incredible workspace. So he fights for equal rights with genders. He's the only showrunner I know who fights to have an equal amount of female and male directors, equal
amazing.
Amount of female and male writers. He's made an amazing environment. And then Ted Danson is the dad of your dreams. And then one of my favorite memories is one that actually recently occurred, which is that Ted had us over to his house for a sleepover, which sounds like it's
no,
not.
No,
it was so sweet. He invited us with our partners to come over, and him and Mary cooked for us.
Aww.
And he has all these kind of like little mini cabins near his house. And so he put each of us up there, and they had like gluten-free snacks on everyone's pillows and just made us breakfast in the morning. And Mary made us a frittata. And it was just like this insane moment of just realizing that, God, this is the first show I've ever worked on where everyone's genuinely really nice, and we're all really good friends, and we have the same sense of humor, and they're good people. So it's nice to know that a show of morality isn't being like acted out by a bunch of dicks.
Yeah, it's a show about morality, it's a show about death, and it's a comedy. And I'm like, I am so...
It shouldn't work.
Yes, because I think about
death all
the time.
On paper, it's a disaster. Do you?
Yeah, because it's like scary, because you're like, I just feel like there's not enough time to do everything you want to do. So how is it to do a comedy about the afterlife and death and not feel sort of bummed out about death?
I don't ever feel bummed about death or afraid of it, but I think that's because I'm no longer living a life that I regret. I think 10 years ago, I was very afraid of death, but I think now I'm doing everything I want. I'm doing a job that I like. I'm fulfilled. I've worked fucking hard to get here. I got here on my own from nowhere. That was always my life dream until I get killed and framed by flat tummy tea. Or one of those Diatox shakes. How dare they all sell laxatives? How dare these celebrities and influencers sell laxatives and not just say
it.
Just say they're laxatives. Own it.
You know what? There is a thing which I don't think is uniquely American, but there is something, this level of perfection of, I did it all myself. I pull myself up. And I turn myself into something, as opposed to saying like, yeah, it's great that you're insanely in shape, but you have a personal trainer, you have a chef, all these things, but nobody wants to own up to that.
You also have a very talented surgeon.
Yeah.
You and I come here, like we're in LA sometimes.
Yeah.
We see these people in real life.
I know. But I think it's that whole narrative of just being, I'm self-made. And so nobody wants to cop to, I had a little bit of help. Because that isn't cool, but it's not about being cool.
It's also just greed, man. Like, have surgery. Knock yourself the fuck out, but own up to it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to use a filter, own up to it. Or just don't use a filter.
Yeah.
But don't lie. Don't make people feel inferior for not living up to something that you yourself do not fit.
Exactly.
And a standard that you yourself do not meet. I think that is gross. I don't use filters on anything. I don't have any airbrushing on anything that I do ever. And I'm very, very transparent about everything that I do. And I own up to my shit and to my flaws. And thus far, it hasn't killed my career.
Mm-hmm. So you brought up your eating disorder. And so could you elaborate, like, what were some of the tools that helped you sort of get out of that? And is this something you still sort of have to deal with every day?
I still have body dysmorphia, which means I can't see in the mirror what other people can see when they look at me.
Mm.
I can see a photograph and see that, but in front of the mirror, I don't know what's wrong with my eyes or my mind, but I can see something very different to what I see in pictures or what other people see. But I had EMDR therapy. That is EMDR. And it is the best thing that I ever did. It's for something that gets used often for post-traumatic stress, but it also works for compulsive eating disorders. And what it did is reprogram my thoughts that are attached to my feelings. So I stopped being afraid of food, and I stopped being afraid of fat when I would see it. And I stopped the self-hating narrative, the bully in my head. You know, we all have that bully in our head that just sort of parrots whatever we've been told by society, but it says it to you quietly in your brain all the time. And I would never let anyone say anything to you that I happily, openly accept saying to myself.
Yeah.
I would stick up for you more than I stick up for me. So it taught me how to like silence the bully in my head and just be like, hold the fuck on. You can't talk to her like that.
Yeah.
And so now I stick up for myself in my own head.
Yeah.
So yeah, EMDR therapy mostly, and opening up to friends about it so that people could keep an eye on me and keep me in check and see when I, you know, was slipping. But there is still practicing in it because, you know, also you're triggered all the time when you see all this shit everywhere that's always telling you to diet. I think protecting yourself, truly protecting yourself online, is one of the most important things you can do, which is just sort of like deleting anyone or anything that triggers you. But it's an ongoing, you know, I had an eating disorder, even though I wasn't a practicing anorexic after the age of 20, I had an eating disorder brain until I was like 29 years old. And so my mind is very clear and I'm able to be better. But truly, that is the only therapy that I could recommend to really like get to the root of the problem.
I'm so happy for you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Are you good with food now?
Yeah, I'm pretty good with it. I think sometimes I'm like, I think I'm okay with it. I just, you know, I always talk about this with my boyfriend just because, you know, we also talk about fittings and stuff and I'm a size 10 and blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, we should talk about that right now.
Yeah, sure.
The fuck?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. And so, you know, there's so many times where like I can't, you know, my size is like, I'll reach out to this person where they said like they only have a 2'4", you're too big, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I just was very clear with her and with my PR people just being like, guys, I am not going to lose weight. Mm-hmm. So what are the other options here? So it's like I bring my own clothes. I buy my own stuff. I'm like, if someone says I'm too big for their clothing, I won't wear their clothes anymore, even if I see it, you know, in a store or whatever. And I just sort
you
of
and I talk about this privately on text quite a lot, is that we, you know, we compare our experiences at photo shoots because neither of us fit into the samples. Like I'm 5'10" and a size 6 and I can't fit into any of the samples. I actually send Phoebe text messages of like me from the back where you can see that I've had to leave the entire dress open and just tape both sides of it together in order to wear the dress on the cover. Like nothing I wear is ever fully zipped up.
Yeah. I've been there.
Like, I'm basically wearing everything you see as an apron. And my ass is out at the back. it's wild and it makes you feel bad about yourself when you're young. But now don't you feel like we've gone from, like, I used to feel shame on me when I couldn't fit into stuff when I was younger. Now I'm like, fucking shame on you for not making something that could fit.
Yeah, and sometimes I still beat myself up being like, oh, I wish I could fit this. But then other times I'm just like, you have the fabric. Just make it bigger. That's fine. You had to cut this out. So just cut maybe 6 more inches out.
That's where it all starts. Yeah. It's a really pervasive and fucking crazy problem where the designer either doesn't want to use more material or is not talented enough to make something that looks good other than when it's hanging off an actual like hip bone or collarbone.
Yeah. I haven't done this yet, but have you ever called anyone out on set for the lack of sizing when it comes to their clothes?
Yes, I did.
Oh, great.
At a photo shoot recently, I couldn't fit into anything. I felt the immediate feeling of shame and embarrassment when I was in the bathroom, like trying on the clothes and not being able to get any of the trousers up past my knees. And they ask you for your sizes weeks in advance.
Yep.
You give them your sizes, you give them your measurements, they know exactly what size you are. And so I felt that immediate, like, I felt hot with shame that I was going to have to walk out and tell people that I didn't fit. And then suddenly I became overcome with this cool feeling of, like, shame on them. How dare they bring me these Gap Kids sizes when I'm a grown woman who sent them my fucking sizes.
Yeah.
And so I came outside and I told everyone off and I said I was absolutely disgusted and that we would either have to change the editorial or I would wear my own clothes, and they let me wear my own clothes.
Yeah, I did that for a shoot too.
Yeah, but it's so sad that we have to bring a suitcase to every single photo shoot full of our own clothes just because nobody can fit us. And we are two very normal sized women.
Jamila, you've accomplished so much, not only like professionally, but also personally. So like, what's next for you? Like, what are some things that you want to just knock off the list?
A Weight Watchers campaign? No.
I was like, oh, shit, she's a fraud.
Can you imagine? I'm writing a book about shame, and I am... I've got another season to do of The Good Place that's coming up in April. And I've turned I Weigh into a company. We're turning it into kind of like a lifestyle company that's actually about your fucking lifestyle, not just about looking thinner and younger.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, we all know.
We're all like, oh, shit.
It's about being smarter and happier. Yeah. And it's like, this is going to be a place where we have a platform to lift up the activists who've been doing all the work all of these years.
That's amazing. Like, honestly, thank you for doing that. Because I think Lifestyle Brands is all about just everyone looking like a Pilates teacher.
Yeah, for sure. If we continue to spend so much time thinking about our bodies and thinking about our aesthetics, we will not spend that valuable time thinking about how to grow our lives and to grow ourselves and to grow our families. And I think what's dangerous about that is that we will never become equal to men if we spend this valuable time thinking about fucking bullshit. There's so many different types of people out there, and they should all be allowed to feel proud of themselves. And so that's all I'm fighting for.
Ugh, Jamila, Jamil.
Phoebe.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you for everything. I appreciate you.
God damn.
Phoebe, after that interview, do you feel lit? Because I feel lit.
I feel fired up. I mean, she makes me mad, but in a righteous way, in a good way. She makes me want to, like, make some changes in my own life, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, and, like, what I loved about the conversation is how you talked about how, like, or how much your body image was affected from a young age, like growing up. I had every teen magazine, and mm-hmm. it wasn't until the last 2 years that I was like, oh, those really fucked me up. So I love that she's drawing attention to that.
Yeah, it's like every teen mag, like, no one has zits. And I'm like, we all had zits. Your cover star should only have zits.
Totally.
Like, only when they have an acne breakout can they do the photo shoot.
We should add zits to your
yes!
social media profiles.
Well, I'm so glad you guys enjoyed the episode. We're not going to, like, talk forever, even though we know you love us. The thing is, we got to go home.
Yeah.
I tried to, like, live here, and WNYC was like, no.
It was a whole thing, you guys.
I was like, I will pay rent. And they were still like, no.
Please leave.
Yeah. So let's do these outro credits. How does that sound?
I think that sounds great, Phoebe.
Should I try to do a British accent the whole way?
Sure.
Oh, fuck.
Follow your truth.
The So Many White Guys team includes Anne-Marie Baldonado, Joanna Solotaroff, Paula Schumann, Joe Plord, Keegan Zimmer, Noor Wazwaz, and moi, Phoebe Robertson. Our theme song was written by a white dude and sung by a bunch of other white dudes. Find behind-the-scenes content on our Instagram at WNYC Studios. You can also follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, or follow me on Instagram at Dope Queen Phoebes, or you can look for me in a garage. I just want to say garage, because they say garage. They say aluminium instead of aluminum.
That one's crazy.
That's crazy. That's why I told Bake Off, and he was like, it's aluminium. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Sounds like a mad scientist.
Right. So anyway, you Brits are quite fucking weird with the way you pronounce things, but it's okay, because guess what? English is based off of you guys. So I guess we just gotta, like, suck it up and speak like you, don't we? Bye, Q. Bye. You should do a, can you do a British accent?
I can try.
Oh, that was good. Just do a little more confidence. Believe in yourself, darling.
Oi, I can try. Can I take the lift, please?
I've got to get Tom to my flat.
There's this crazy bird up there. Love.
I love how you're just saying, like, one word, so you can't even get the momentum of the accent going.
Did somebody say crumpet?
Did somebody say tea time? Because I would love some tea and some sandwiches. Cucumber, please. Hey guys, thanks for listening to the episode. As you know, I have a stand-up tour coming up called Sorry, Harriet Tubman. I'll be going all over the country. That's country. So go to phoeberobinson.com to get your tickets. They're going fast, babies.